NYC HDC, the floor is yours.
I'd like to call the meeting of the HDC Audit Committee to order and promote the presence of the quorum. First item on the agenda is to approve the minutes of members' meeting, which is held on November 27, 2017. Motion to approve.
Motion second.
Thank you. Thank you. Rich Froelich, you can review the agenda, please.
Thank you, Dan. We have a big agenda, obviously. This is for the approval of our annual financial report. Kathy will present that, and then EY is represented by Lou and Samantha, who will present their audit report. Then there will be approval of the annual financial statements. Then the presentation of the annual investment report by Ellen, include, and then followed by her doing her normal debt and investment report. And also we'll ask for an action regarding our semi-annual rating agency reserve as pursuant to a program we set up with you several years ago. Then Mary will provide the credit risk exposure. Shirley will do a we'll review the quality assessment report that we got from an external firm, and then we'll have her internal audit report. And then Madhvi will present the cybersecurity update pursuant to our discussions from several meetings ago to provide you with a little bit of an update on that. And then we'll actually need to go into the next session later, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay. Thank you, Ruth. The next item is a presentation of the annual financial report of HD for fiscal year 2017. Kathleen?
Thank you, Mark. Please note that the draft financials sent to you originally last week have been updated to reflect a slight change due to the new OPEC GASB, which I will explain in a few minutes. We expect that the financial statements in front of you will be the final version. I'm pleased to report the 2017 was another exceptional year for corporations. HDC has maintained its position as one of the nation's leading housing finance agencies and has continued to play a central role in the mayor's housing plan. The financial corporation, as well as the strong leadership and hard work of a dedicated staff, are a strong gauge of that continued success. During fiscal year 2017, the corporation issued 26 bond series totaling $1.5 billion. In addition, proceeds from debt obligations issued during the year amounted to $160.8 million, and one new certificate of participation with the FFB totaled $103 million, for a total of $1.7 billion in proceeds for the fiscal year. Total HDC assets were $16.1 billion, an increase of $1.7 billion, or 11.85% from fiscal year end 2016, due to the corporation's robust mortgage lending and bond financing activities. Total liabilities were $13.7 billion, an increase of $1.5 billion, or 12.3% from 2016, as a result of the corporation's ongoing debt and lending. HDC's total net position at fiscal year end was $2.5 billion, an increase of $204.8 million, or 9.07% from 2016, due to normal operating activities and non-operating revenue grants and funds. The increase in net position allowed corporations to play a critical role in the mayor's housing plan and provide subsidies for affordable housing development to region members. As Ernst & Young mentioned in our last meeting, this year the corporation early adopted GASB number 75, accounting and financial reporting for post-employment benefits other than pensions, otherwise known as OPEB. This new GASB statement replaces requirements of GASB number 45 and 57 for OPEB. The implementation of GASB 75 resulted in adjustments to salaries and related expenses in the 2017 financials in the amount of $1.3 million, which is reflected in the updated financial statement package at the NAP. EY will walk you through the details of the impact of GASB 75 on our financials, but it wasn't material. I would like to take this opportunity to thank Mary John, our controller, as well as the senior managers in the department and the rest of the HDC accounting staff for all their hard work and dedication in producing the financial statement. Mary has successfully run many audits over the years as our deputy controller. This is the first audit under her steady leadership, and I'd like to thank her for a smooth transition this year. Lou and Samantha will walk you through the audit results. If you have any questions, please.
Item is a discussion of the Ernst & Young audit reports.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. If I could turn your attention to page 3 of this presentation, audit results. Start with just reviewing our deliverables, and we will be expressing an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion, on the financial statements, the single audit report.
Is it really different between unmodified and qualified?
New terminology that the AMC. Yeah, they're always trying to keep us on our toes. as well as the schedule of investments. As it relates to internal control communications, there is no need for any communication with respect to significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, as we did not identify any. We do issue a report on internal control over financial reporting in accordance with government auditing standards and the compliance for each major federal program, which are both, again, unmodified opinions. And then we also issue a report on the compliance with the minimum servicing requirements, otherwise known as the USAP report. And we did not identify any issues with respect to servicing. I'll go through a high-level executive summary, and then Samantha could jump into a little bit more of the specifics. We'll keep it high-level, as I know there's a lot on the agenda. But as of today, the status is we've completed our audit procedures. We just need the final management rep letter, which we will provide to the team. There's nothing unusual from the prior year. It's a pretty boilerplate representation letter. Our scope of the audit was consistent with what we had discussed and reviewed with you back in September, and there was no need for any changes to that. Again, our results, the accounting matters that we identified were appropriate in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Judgments and estimates were consistent with the prior year, and we deemed them to be reasonable. We did not identify any misstatements that needed to be corrected, and there are no unrecorded misstatements. The basis for our audit strategy is the evaluation of the entity-level controls and the internal controls of the processes. Based on our evaluations, we deem them to be operating effectively, and we received outstanding cooperation from the corporation. And again, as this was Mary's first time going through it as the controller and the lead, we thank you for all of your efforts, and echo your thoughts about this. As far as open items, there's been some changes from when we prepared this a few days ago. We've completed our evaluation of the OPEB, and again, we just need to send the rep letter for signature, and we plan to issue, provide you with the letter on Monday. Okay. Samantha?
Okay, so if you turn to page 5, these are our areas of audit emphasis. So we focused our procedures on areas where there's the greatest risk of material misstatement to the financial statements. As Lou mentioned, these significant accounts were what were communicated during the audit plan. There was no additional accounts. So I'll just go through these very briefly. So the first area is internal controls. So we start out the audit doing a review of walkthroughs, narratives, and perform our internal control procedures, and we did not have any findings that were identified. For cash and cash equivalents, we confirmed all significant cash and investment balances, and we tested investments for our independent valuation, and we made sure that all the disclosures that were included in the financial statements were proper. The next area is mortgage receivable balances. So we confirm all significant mortgage receivable balances. So we do this as of an interim date, as of September 30th. And then we perform roll forward procedures. So anything that's significant between 9:30 and year end, we perform testing. We did not find any issues in this area as well. The next area is long-term debt, including bonds payable, debt obligations, and the participation with FFB. So we confirmed 100% of outstanding debt and tested the corporation's compliance with the related covenants. No findings were noted. The loan participation receivable, we agree to outstanding mortgage loan detail and the corresponding due to New York City, and we test on a sample basis. No exceptions were noted. Net position, we test changes to net position and evaluate the classifications between designated, restricted, unrestricted. The due to New York City and payable to mortgager, we test on a sample basis. We did not identify any findings. As Lou mentioned, we have concluded our single audit, and the overall opinion will be unmodified. We did not find any findings that were required to be reported under uniform guidance. Litigation, so we reviewed the legal letter and noted there was nothing that required additional disclosure within the financial statements. The obligation for pensions, we obtained the actuarial valuation and schedule of employer allocations provided by the New York City Office of the Actuaries. We review and make sure that the assumptions that are used are reasonable and make sure that there's proper disclosure within the financial statements. And then, as Kathy mentioned, this year, HDC early adopted GASB 75. So this required HDC to record the OPEB liability on the financial statements, basically very similar to what was done for GASB 68 and putting the net pension liability on the financial statements. So since this was the first year of implementation, we did provide EY's internal actuaries the GASB report provided by Conduent, and they reviewed all the assumptions to make sure that they were in line with market trends and no findings were noted. And it did require a significant amount of disclosure this year in the financial statements. So we reviewed that. We had our national practice review since it was the first year, and everything is good now. And then if you turn to page 6, the next area is interest on loans. So we test interest on loans, including substantive analytical procedures, and then interest in bond premium discount. We test this as well, and we perform substantive analytical procedures over this, and no exceptions were noted for either. And then operating expenses, we test internal controls over procurement and cash disbursements, and then anything that's non-significant, we will test as well, or we test it as well.
I think on Greenwich. I think on Greenwich.
You mean the departmentally? I mean, it's sort of a separate office, but it's sort of akin with OLR.
I've never even heard it spelled, but I know it must
exist. Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I think it may be kind of akin to through labor relations and the like, because it has everything to do with the pension and the like. The pension, the city's pension has, I think there is over 300,000 current participants, or maybe even more. I think that's the current workforce. I think it may be more when you include the retirees. So it's big.
Sorry.
That's okay. So if I can turn your attention to page 8. So this lists out required communications that we're required to communicate either with our audit plan or in our audit results book. So this is a summary, and the pages behind it detail. You can see which page number each communication relates to. I won't go through them all individually, just the bigger areas. We note that we did not identify HDC as a going concern. We did not identify any uncorrected misstatements or material corrected misstatements. As Lou said, there were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. We did not identify any fraud or noncompliance with laws and regulations. We did not identify any issues with independence. We did not have any disagreements with management, and there was no other findings that we feel the need to bring your attention to. That pretty much concludes everything. We also do have, I think in your package, there's a financial analysis booklet. If anybody has any questions, basically, as Kathy said, it was another great year for HDC, so I won't go through each one of these slides individually.
In looking at it myself, I mean, it's just a continuous trend that we've seen for a bunch of years. Probably there's really nothing, I think, that is particularly surprising or whatever, but it does show strong continuous performance by the corporation.
Any questions? So I would move now to approval of the annual financial statement. Any opposed? The motion carries. Now the next item is the approval of the annual investment report. Ellen?
Thank you. The New York State Public Authorities Law requires HTC to provide an annual investment report and details the required content for the report. These requirements are met by the 2017 annual investment report presented, which includes data on investments made, investment earnings and fees paid, draft copies of the corporation's audited financial statements. Investment guidelines as approved by the members on September 19, 2017. Draft report of independent auditors on compliance with investment guidelines. But also includes descriptive information about the corporation, the funds it has under management, and the various types of oversight and controls on the corporation's investment practices. Major points include earnings on investments total $37.8 million in fiscal year 2017, an increase of $11.7 million from fiscal year 2016. It can be attributable to an increase in short-term interest rates and an increase in investment proceeds from fiscal year 2017. Potential rising interest rate environment across the shorter-term maturity is a factor to consider in the corporation's ongoing investment strategy. Because of the corporation's commitments, the majority of investments must be held for the short term, which provides sufficient liquidity for the corporation. In response to the current interest rate environment, the corporation continues to invest primarily in collateralized demand deposits and direct purchases of U.S. Treasury and agency obligations in order to optimize yield. Required by GASB 31, the corporation has recorded a fair value adjustment in its investment portfolio. The corporation recorded a net depreciation of $10.8 million for fiscal year 2017. As part of the corporation's investment policies, it looks to invest its funds in corporate-related reserves and securities with the intent to hold the investment to maturity. As a result, any unrealized depreciation or depreciation is only reported as an accounting gain or loss at this time. HTC funds under management increased about 22.2% from fiscal year-end 2016 to fiscal year-end 2017, from $3.4 billion to $4.2 billion. The corporation had an 8.8% growth in net position over the last year. Since our fiscal year end in October 2017, short-term rates have trended higher. HTC did not incur or pay any fees, commissions, or charges for investment services. Treasury operations are conducted by the corporation's cash management division, which uses electronic and telephone bidding processes to competitively purchase securities that meet the corporation's investment guidelines and funding needs. Oversight is provided internally by an investment committee and by various reviews by HTC's credit risk and internal audit unit. There are also investment and credit risk reports presented at each meeting of the corporation's audit committee and an annual examination by external auditors Ernst & Young. Corporation investment guidelines are approved by the members on September 19, 2017, with no changes at that time. On approval by the audit committee and ratification by the board, the report will be submitted to the mayor and to both the city and state controllers as required by the public authorities law. I'm glad to answer any questions about the 2017 investment report or the investment guidelines. Okay, so if there are none, the corporation requests that the members approve the 2017 annual investment report and readopt the investment guidelines without any changes at this time.
All in favor, opposed, none, motion carries. Alan, you want to continue with the debt report?
Sure. Big part. Okay, so the debt report, the corporation's debt report is as of December 31st, 2017. The last debt report presented to the audit committee was as of September 30th, 2017. During this time, the corporation issued 6 series of open resolution bonds in the amount of $518.3 million, 2 series of multifamily secured resolution bonds, amount of $65.3 million, and 1 series of pass-through bonds, amount of $59.9 million, and 2 series of debt obligations, totaling $61.2 million. There are bond redemptions, 5 series of open resolution bonds, amount of $121 million, and 4 standalone series, amount of $140.6 million. The corporation's debt outstanding as of December 31st, 2017, is approximately $10.98 billion, and the corporation's statutory debt capacity stands at $12.5 billion.
Thank you. The next item is the investment report and approval of the rating agency reserve increase.
Okay, the corporation investment report is for January 17, 2018. Funds under management as of that date a total of approximately $4.19 billion, and this report reflects routine investment activity. In regard to the rating agency reserve, on a semi-annual basis, the rating agency reserve amount is reviewed and approved by the committee. After debt service on the open resolution was paid on November 1st, 2017, a certain redemption was made in the month of November. The amount of long-term bond outstanding in the open resolution was approximately $4.27 billion. Based on this balance, a 2.25% reserve would amount to about $96 million. 2.5% reserve would be $106.8 million, and a 2.25% reserve would amount to $117.4 million. During fiscal year 2017, the reserve was funded in the amount of $92.5 million. Due to the higher amount of bonds outstanding, HTC staff recommends that the reserve should be increased to $96 million at this time. If there are no questions, I'll ask the audit committee to approve the rating and the reserve to the amount of $96 million.
Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, Mary, please report on the HTC credit risk exposure.
Since the last report, we added one new counterparty, so this is a new counterparty, Bank of the Ozarks, which is a small regional bank headquartered in Arkansas that does have a presence in the US. Although they are not rated by Moody's or S&P, they do have a A-minus rating for full economy. All of the vessels with the Bank of the Ozarks are both liabilities. Since the last report, there was one rating agency change. December, Moody's upgraded Bank of America from single A1, and they just cited the bank's improved profitability and stability. Our counterparty exposure is pretty well diversified, with our largest exposures continuing to be sustained and steady up. Investments rated AA or higher with 50% of total investments versus 48% of last year's, while the weighted average maturity is shorter than 11 years. Finally, our exposure to liquidity providers declined to $28.5 million from $41.5 million due to redemption of the 2018.
Are you in search of New York bank, or is it, how does the bank go in car? Well, how does that relationship begin?
We do look for banks that are willing to pay a higher rate of return on demand deposit accounts. So when we attend events like GLOA, you know, we do seek out people who are, you know, that if they don't have the high enough rating, are willing to collateralize the account. So we have, expanded it, and it changes because we used to have more with some of the New York banks that didn't want cash for a period of time. So we have Lakeland Bank, and we have Customers Bank. So we have added, and obviously, at one point we had Webster. I mean, there are different banks at times that want money, and there are times when they don't. And if they don't respond, I guess Lisa's not here. Lisa runs a tight ship as far as making sure that we get the best returns possible. In this rising rate environment, we are encouraging banks to increase the rate for our accounts, and if they don't, we move on.
Do you have any concerns about which bank?
Not significantly. I mean, but Mary should answer that.
And we don't have a whole lot of exposure to Deutsche Bank. I think right now all we have is some repo, and there are permanent credit enhancements on one of our projects. So not terribly concerned. It is on our radar, and we monitor.
Despite the comments that, you know, with the European banks that they couldn't have the systemic support, Deutsche Bank is very large and would have, I would expect, a certain degree of systemic support by the German government.
Shirley, quality assessment report update, please.
Thank you. We received the final report on the results of the QAR
performed by BDO USA last August. A hard copy is in your package. The objectives of the assessment were to assess internal audit's performance of the standards and international standards for the professional practice of internal auditing, to evaluate internal audit's efficiency and effectiveness in carrying out its mission, and to identify opportunities to enhance its management and work processes as well as add value to HEC. We received an overall opinion of generally conforms with the standards, the definition of internal auditing, and the code of ethics. Generally conforms is the highest rating and means internal audit has a charter and policies and processes that were judged in conformance with the standard, with some opportunities for improvement. The QAR team made recommendations to both improve the audit activity function and to improve the audit process. We have addressed their recommendation to update the language in the internal audit charter to incorporate the revised standards effective January 2017. Upon legal review and senior management's approval, the revised charter will be submitted to you at the next audit committee meeting for your approval. We have implemented the executive sessions with the audit committee, as you're aware, at least annually, and scheduled one-on-one quarterly meetings with the president. Improving the timeliness of our audit engagements has been one of our biggest challenges, and we're working to address that. We will update and strengthen the Quality Assurance Improvement Program to include internal periodic assessments of the audit activity, ongoing measurement and analysis of performance, and under this Quality Assurance Improvement Program, develop and implement customer surveys to solicit feedback from our stakeholders for greater impact and efficiency. We will use our audit management software teammate, the issue tracking module, to monitor audit results to ensure that management's agreed upon actions have been implemented or that senior management has accepted the risk of not implementing those actions. To enhance stakeholder relations and the significance of the internal audit within HEC, we'll perform skills gap assessment, strengthen staff training and development, and refresh the approach, our approach to stakeholder relationship management. The recommendation to incorporate the complete coverage of high, medium, and low risk areas over a defined period is addressed in our 2018 audit plan, which includes audit projects from these three risk areas. We've also adjusted the audit schedule to indicate the level of risk for each audit project. Strengthening the periodic reporting to the audit committee and to senior management will improve as we strengthen our ongoing analysis, performance measurements, and monitoring activities and report them out to you. The remaining recommendations will be considered and addressed over time, including strengthening internal audit support of HDC governance processes and pursuing data and analytics to improve our efficiency. Going forward, we'll periodically report on our progress in addressing all the recommendations to you. That concludes my report. Are there any questions?
The internal audit report, Shirley.
Thank you. Since the last audit committee meeting, audit staff has completed and or is finalizing the remaining five audit projects from 2017 audit schedule. The reports on the results of three of those projects, the required annual reviews of employee expenses, president's office expenses, and petty cash in your package. I'll just really briefly summarize the results. In both the employee expenses and petty cash office expenses, the objectives were to evaluate the effectiveness of controls over employee expense reimbursements and related expenses, and to verify compliance with the corporation's policies and procedures relating to these types of job expenses. The scope of employee expenses covered in 12 selected categories from November 1st, 2016 to July 31st, 2017. We determined that the controls were effective, ensuring that employee reimbursements and vendor payments are authorized, appropriate, and properly recorded. We found that the corporation's employees generally comply with
policies and procedures for processing employee reimbursement and payment of vendor invoices for those types of expenses. In the president's office expenses, the scope of our review covered expenditures charged to president's office for selected categories from October 1st, 2016 to September 30th, 2017. We found those expenses for the selected categories were processed correctly according to the travel and business expense policies in the employee handbook, and there were no significant issues, and that all expenses included the proper documentation and authorization. For petty cash, our objectives were to determine that the petty cash asset was safeguarded, maintained in a proper amount, petty cash disbursements were in compliance with corporation's policies and procedures, and trust fund disbursements were properly authorized and processed in the general ledger. Our scope covered disbursements from the petty cash from December 23, 2016 to December 19, 2017. There were no issues. We established that the petty cash disbursements were in compliance with policies and procedures. The cash asset was secured and maintained in the proper amount, and all expenditures are properly authorized and processed in jail. That concludes my report. Are any questions?
You had a question of health club. What is it, membership?
Yes, yes, part of our employee expenses audit. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Other questions, then we'll go on to cybersecurity.
Thank you. I am pleased to provide the following cybersecurity report. I would like to mention that this presentation and report are intentionally left kept general with respect to areas that we are currently or will be working on so as to protect HTC, since this report and meeting are open to the public. Cybersecurity continues to be a top concern for HTC. We have seen yet another eventful year with several attacks making the news. I have a more detailed memo enclosed in your package, so I will just go over the highlights since my last report. Under Executive Order 28, the Mayor of New York has created the New York City Cyber Command NYC3 unit effective July 11, 2017. And to protect the City of New York's information infrastructure and the ability of agencies and personnel to serve the residents of the City of New York. I'm closely in touch with this unit, and as they expand their duties and responsibilities, we will further develop our security policies as needed. As an ongoing training plan, we continue educating employees on the best security practices. Last year, we sent 4 separate mandatory training campaigns to our employees so they stay informed of the latest trends in cyber and phishing attacks and also their user responsibilities. Earlier this year, we sent a training campaign for mobile security. We continue publishing quarterly newsletters on our internal portal. We completed several major system upgrades, including the virtualization platform, firewall, server operating systems, backup software, application software, antivirus, and anti-malware. Cloud-based email and web filters are set up to have signatures automatically updated. As discussed in our last report, each of these security systems has a different security dashboard, and the introduction of Security Information and Event Management, also called CM Services, has this task simplified. Managed Services performs continuous network monitoring to quickly detect and address ongoing cyber threats, and the capability of automatically blocking, quarantining, and receiving alerts on events. Some of the initiatives we are working on for 2018. Billions of devices are currently affected by 2 major security flaws revealed by cybersecurity researchers earlier this year. The flaws dubbed Meltdown and Spectre affect processing chips made by Intel, AMD, and ARM Holdings. As a countermeasure to these flaws, software companies such as Microsoft and Apple have rolled out patches to protect against side channel attacks and prevent kernel space and physical memory mappings available in the user space, and we are in the process of patching our systems. We have done several firewall penetration tests in the past, but are currently in the process of conducting a more comprehensive vulnerability assessment, including searching the dark web for any leaked corporate data and internally also trying to break our system. And the results of these tests are due early next month. So based on the results of this penetration test, we will take steps to improve areas of deficiency. Also, we are setting up a pilot test for data leakage prevention system, DLP system. This is designed to prevent sensitive corporate information leaving the corporation via insecure ways like handheld devices, personal email addresses, non-work-related application portals. Another pilot test is also being set up for mobile security, and this is to mitigate any mobile device-based malware attacks. Malware unintentionally released into our environment via smartphones can also cause a great deal of harm to our network. This helps prevent the use of iPhones and this helps monitor the use of iPhones and Android devices that are connected to our network. This year, we also plan to do a desktop migration to Windows 10 to take advantage of the new security features. It's a two-year-long project. As we continue increasing our cloud usage footprint, we are reviewing cloud vendors for exchange and also for our backup data center infrastructure. There could be significant cost savings with this initiative and also changes to our security practices. In closing, there are no breaches to report. I would like to thank all of the IT team members who've been helping with these efforts. I'll be glad to take on any questions.
Any other business? Just two quick items. Have we seen any recent tax law changes? Any pullback on the board of developers and tax credit issues?
We haven't seen pullback from developers. What we do know is that the raises that will be achieved are likely to fall. A significant portion of that decline came when just the rumor of tax reform happened, but the actual decrease in the rate from 35% to 21% is going to make some of those decreases permanent, and they could slide further. We really don't know. The quotes we've been getting in New York City and any place where the credit quality, either by project or by geography, is stronger, has meant that we've seen those hold up significantly. We're getting quotes at $1.05, which isn't inconsistent with what we've seen in the last round. So we're hopeful that we're going to be able to kind of hold the floor, but we don't really know where that's going to go. We're still optimistic that even in the aftermath of that reform, Cantwell-Hatch bill, which is tax credit reform bill, still has very strong bipartisan support, and we've been asked to kind of take a look at what modifications might be helpful in pushing that forward as well. And we actually feel that that could mitigate the impact significantly and might actually leave us in a little bit of a positive position in terms of, if that were to pass, in terms of where we end up on tax credits. So we're optimistic, at least in New York, if that passes.
And just adding on the bond side, we obviously were, when we last met, we were worried about the possibility of losing private activity bonds. That did not happen, which is, tremendously important to us and our ability to lend. But the modifications to the tax rate may have some impact on the CRA interest in buying our bonds. But on the flip side, people looking to shelter New York income, with the loss of the state and local tax deduction or the reduction of it, may find that tax-exempt bonds are more attractive. So how that will play out as far as the marketability of our bonds is to be seen. There may be some impact on pricing, but hopefully it'll be on the small side.
That said, on pricing, that the decrease that we've already experienced down to that $1.05, $1.03, when you run it across all the resources of New York City and New York State that are invested in New York City annually, that loss could be about $200 million a year, which is kind of the pivot money for 1,500 units. So absent Cantwell Hatch, we would be down some amount of production and some amount of subsidy, or we could fill in the subsidy. But so it's real. The impact is real. We're just hopeful that Cantwell Hatch will mitigate some of those losses.
On the other hand, the Opportunity Zone might become a source of capital depending upon where the governor is decides to place it, and which census tract you're targeted. It won't apply to the entire city, but there may be another stream of investment dollars that could come in. We think housing will be covered. So I don't know what the volume is that it could generate. Sort of like LIHTC or New Market. There's something there.
It's investment that would shelter capital gains.
It shelters capital gains, but it creates this pool of equity that could be used for investment.
And the governor has to name those locations by March, so things are moving very, very quickly. There's a number of task forces that are being organized to respond to that, to see, one, where this geography should be, what it actually includes, what kind of risk factors are involved. So there's a lot of pieces of these opportunity zones that are not clear yet, but hopefully we'll know more in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, another item, I took the opportunity to give a shameless commercial for the HDC. We had the retiring first deputy mayor give us a little talk at the Harvard Club, and he started off with an 18% approval rating of government in general, and went on from there. So at the end, I have to take a bookend position here and describe, you know, this agency's growth from basically taking excess funds out of Mitchell Lama to help the city during the financial crisis to now being the largest affordable housing finance agency. His response, I think it's a direct quote, is, "If I didn't think stories like HDC were possible, I'd kill myself."
That
was a